I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Stephen and Joanne here. Time for another second cup because one cup of us is just not enough,
Joanne. There you go. We got a great podcast coming your way today. We got Kirk Gibson coming in.
I am so
Tiger
excited.
Tiger great Kirk Gibson.
We're going to have to ask him about that home run, you know, in 84.
You can't forget that, right? His arms up in the air. Of course, his latest opponent is Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. And he's doing amazing work to raise money and all that for Parkinson's. So in just a little while, he's coming in the studio. We're going to talk to him about that.
Also, your favorite 90s sitcoms. That was a great year for sitcoms. And there's so many great ones out there. So we're going to talk about which ones kind of rank the highest in different places, not just which ones were the best ones.
Plus, there's some controversy on the list because there's one...
Oh, that was left off the
one
list?
One sitcom that was left off that
ridiculous.
Arguably is a 90s sitcom.
And what's the deal with that?
It started in late 1989.
80s. All right.
So we'll talk about that. But first, you have been very busy this week, Stephen. I was out yesterday at Dodge Park No. 5 in Commerce to get an update on Scarlett's Park.
I got to show you around. Now, your first impression when you saw it, because I've been talking about this. You've known me, well, for 20 years. But for the last 3 years, we've been raising $1 million to build this. So you've been hearing me talk about it for the last 3 years. So when you actually saw the bill, what was your first thought?
I don't know. What in the world are they doing? Because it's so out of
No, we ask ourselves that a lot, too.
I'm telling you, when you're not in the construction business or the creating a playground business, it's a marvel to watch them put all of you guys dig these holes and put the pieces in and the support system, and you are creating a playground from nothing. It's amazing.
Well, the just to take a little backtrack on this, Scarlett Smile is named after Scarlett, my granddaughter, 6 years old with spinal muscular atrophy. Essentially, she doesn't have any muscle. She's missing a gene that builds muscle, so it puts her in a wheelchair. But she's like every other kid. She just wants to have fun.
Yes.
And we found that the playgrounds that are built for what you quote, unquote, special needs kids tend to be isolated. They put them over a different area to kind of keep them away from other kids on their playground.
I don't think that's done on purpose.
No, I think the thought was, well, you know, we need to keep them safe. You know, like, you got to put them over here. But the problem is it causes another kind of damage. It's
absolutely
an isolation.
Yes.
And so Scarlett quickly recognized this, that she was on one playground and all the other kids are on the other, and she wanted to play with them. But their playground is not accessible.
Right.
And so she couldn't play on their playground. So we decided there has to be a way to redesign it. So my wife and I, for the last 3 years, kind of started coming up with this idea of putting the playgrounds together. So all kids can basically access all equipment. So kids who don't need special equipment are fine. They can still run and jump and climb and all the other things. But the kids who do need that equipment, the ramps and so forth, have access to that. But they're all in the same place at the same time. And it's a rather unusual design. There are a few around the country that we've used as models. But this has been really ambitious, and there's nothing like it. I can absolutely guarantee you nothing like it in Michigan.
It's phenomenal to see. And we did a Facebook Live from there on Tuesday morning. So you can get an idea if you haven't checked that out. It's on WMC's Facebook page and mine too and yours too. You can check out what it looked like on Tuesday.
Yeah,
now, you may be
fast.
Listening to this podcast days and days from now, and you're hoping within days to have this thing up, Stephen.
Yeah,
by
Friday, the end of the week of August 12th, we're supposed to pretty much have all of the equipment in place. Now, there's going to probably be a little minor things that have to be done. But you got to keep in mind, in order to put this thing in, I lost track, but I think we have about almost 400 post holes.
Wow.
It's almost 3/4 acre. 400 post holes, and these all have to be 12 inches around and at least 40 inch deep. Some of them are 5 feet deep.
Wow.
Because they have these huge, basically umbrella structures that go up above the whole playground. And these steel pipes alone are like 250 pounds. And so I'm out there just hauling these pipes around with other guys, putting them in these holes and then getting everything set. It's got a ton of ramping. It's got more ramping than any playground you've ever seen.
But that's because then people with wheelchairs can, like
Scarlett, have access to the whole thing.
You got it. It's really magical, and it's to see the progress for all your hard work, you and Loren. It was really just so heartening yesterday when I saw it.
It's literally blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah. I haven't really bled a lot. I cried a little.
Well, you did break your finger. So.
I think I broke my I don't know if I broke my finger. I've got a splint on it right now. My sister's a doctor, and she just retired last week and is out visiting us and been watching this progress. And so she was looking at my finger very seriously, and she goes, you need to go to the hospital and get that x-ray. And I said, okay, what's that x-ray going to tell me? Well, tell me if it's broken. I said, okay, so if it's broken, what would you do? Oh, we put a splint on it. I'd say, okay, let's say it's not broken. It's just like sprained.
Right.
What would you do? We put a splint on it. I said, okay, so I just put a splint on it. She goes, well, you may need surgery. I said, okay, so if you decide I need surgery, what would you do? Well, we'd put a splint on it for a while. And then so I said,
bottom
okay,
line, he's got a splint on
I got a splint on my finger. And I have to kind of take it off during the day because it really gets in the way. But I'm okay, you know, but it's a very small price to pay.
Yes, it is for what you guys are doing. So we'll keep you posted
Park,
on that. It's
you
amazing.
Can also check that out, by the way, at scarletsmile.org. And there's only one T in Scarlet.
Okay.
So scarletsmile.org.
Yeah, and you can buy a brick, commemorative brick, which is really neat, $200, and it'll go on the outside along the pathway. See how much I know about this?
You do. Well, I've been talking about it.
Hey, exactly. How can't I? Hey, let's get to these 90s sitcoms now.
Okay.
All right, so...
we're going to go in reverse order here?
Yeah, let's do this. This was put together by like Ranker and Dish Network, and they were looking at like the top 90s sitcoms and then the most popular sitcom by state.
Okay.
So first let's, the 10th, I loved this one, The King of Queens. Before we even get into which was most popular in what state, The King of Queens.
I thought that was a good show.
I loved that one.
Kevin Hart, or Kevin.
Yes.
The other Kevin.
Darn it. The bigger dude who's in Mall Cop.
I just can't remember.
Paul Blart.
I know.
Right?
Exactly.
In Mall Cop. Okay. That is I love that show. Then Roseanne came in number 9.
Roseanne. The original Roseanne. Yeah, original Roseanne. Sure.
But let's back up for 1 second. And let you know that you're not going to like to hear this, but Seinfeld is not on this list.
What's
because
the deal with that?
They knew it would come in number 1, they said because it kicked off in 1989.
But it was like November of 1980.
And
like
it ran all during the 90s, so exactly. We don't get that at all. But so you're not going to find that on the list, even though I think most
but
people would put
one
that
in your
number
hearts.
1. Yes. Okay, The Simpsons come in at number 8.
I can't believe it was even on in the 80s. It's been on so
90s,
long.
90s.
Or 90s, rather.
Yeah, it has been on for a long time. Yeah. Boy Meets World. I never watched that one.
Fred Savage. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
That was regular Friday night watching for my family.
Yeah.
I mean, I was usually at work, but then my wife and kids would always watch Boy Meets World.
Okay. Number 6 was Everybody Loves Raymond.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's one issue I have with a lot of sitcoms, though.
What's that?
Can I share? Because it was in Everybody Loves Raymond. The guys, they always make the guys, the dads, out to be stupid. Kind of.
Are we?
No, you're not. And I know. See?
No, that is true.
Right?
They're usually kind of clueless.
And the women are usually making clueless, and the women are like making
they've always got one kid that's smarter than all of them.
I don't know. I haven't always loved that kind of formula, and that's why, according to Jim, do you remember that one?
Yep.
I liked that one, and Last Man Standing.
Yep.
There's a respect among the married, Tim Allen and his wife in Last Man Standing that I really appreciate. They rib each other, and there's a lot of jokes between them, but there's a respect, and it's not like totally like, oh, you're dumb, and I'm not.
One of your favorites is The Middle, right? And so how that kind of play? Because he was always portrayed as just a bit like clueless.
Yeah. Well, they were both.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Then the kid was the smartest in the group. Right.
I guess. I did love The Middle.
Right.
I love that show.
But we digress.
All right. Yes, we do. That 70s show was number 5.
Which I think is funny in the 90s that 70s show is the top one. But it was actually a brilliantly done show.
All right. You know what comes in at number 4? Home Improvement.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Allen again.
Okay.
I love Home Improvement. Came in number 4.
Right. Now, they're rebooting that, aren't they? I heard
they're
considering a reboot of Home Improvement.
But Tim Allen's doing Last Man Standing.
How I know.
Are they gonna do that?
He'll do 2 of them.
Maybe.
He'll be the last man standing.
Okay, Frasier came in at number 3.
Frasier,
most popular
good show. And that was a spinoff,
sitcoms.
Of course, from Cheers.
Yes. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh,
number
Will Smith.
2. But interestingly, that did not come in as the most popular in Pennsylvania, which Philadelphia, of course.
Was where?
No. Remember, and he mentions Philadelphia. It takes place
Which is funny because Home Improvement did come in number 1 in Michigan, which is where it was based, allegedly.
It did. So Home Improvement was the number 1 most popular sitcom
in
the state of Michigan, which makes sense to me.
Right.
And the number 1 sitcom, which means that it was the most popular in the most states.
Like 12 states or something.
Can you guess it?
I think it has to be Friends.
It is Friends.
Yeah,
number 1.
Yeah.
Now, if it was Seinfeld, I think Seinfeld would have, like, if you would have included that in the mix, I think that would have run away with it.
Seinfeld 1, then Friends 2, and then kind of down that
way. Yeah. But, yeah, so Friends was number 1. So now you know. And you have my take on the formula for sitcoms.
All right. Now time for our special guest.
So happy to have with us this morning Tiger great Kirk Gibson, along with Jeff Latham, the chairperson of the Michigan Parkinson Foundation. Thanks, both of you guys, for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You are here for an amazing cause and an amazing reason, a great fundraiser you've got coming up to help with Parkinson's. But first, if we can.
Well, Kirk, first of all, we got to start in 1984. I mean, you got to when you talk to Kirk Gibson. You got to talk about that home run.
Well, the start of that home run happened my first major league at bat, who I volunteered to hit off Goose Gossage, who's the best closer in the game. And he struck me out on three pitches in about 25 seconds. It didn't take long. And I did not have very good success over the next 5 years against him. I think I was 1-for-15 with 9 or 10 strikeouts. And we met again in the World Series, and I had always dreamed about getting him when it counted. So it worked out well. That's why you keep on dreaming, and it sealed the World Series, and I was just fortunate to be in that moment and fortunate to be on such a good team.
I don't think any of us will ever forget the shot that was in the papers the next day of you running around the bases with your arms up.
Well, now that I have Parkinson's, it's changed a little bit. It's more of a why.
Yeah.
But, not to make light of that, but again, it was a special moment, and that picture captures not just what I accomplished, but if you look in behind and look at the faces of the fans and stuff, it's incredible.
It was.
Your baseball career has taken you so many places since then. Talk a little bit about what Kirk Gibson has been up to. Obviously, we listened to you on the radio, so we know. But TV. What happens between TV. Those radio broadcasts? The TV broadcast. Talk about what happens then.
Well, I've kind of done the gamut. Imagine me being in the media because I was known to be somewhat gruff during my playing days. But that's just because I was intense and I was focused and I was the way I was to be on task when I put my uniform on. But since then, I've been a coach. I've been a manager. And I've done TV analyst work for Fox Sports Detroit. And I'm now also working for Al Avila, the general manager for the Tigers, in an advisory role. So I'll do the TV tonight, and I'll run over to Erie, Pennsylvania for 2 or 3 days and evaluate, because you have to make decisions. Obviously, the Tigers are in a rebuilding mode, and hopefully I can shed some positivity and some light on some young men that will get us back to the 84 feeling.
Is it tough for you to watch a season like this? Or to you, is it just this is part of rebuilding? It is what it is. Don't get too upset about it.
It is what it is, to an extent. It's tough because you feel for the guys. They put so much effort in there, and you want them to learn. And then you have, I've been in professional baseball since 1978, so my physical ability has waned, but my wisdom and knowledge is gained just through experiences and through being touched by so many great gentlemen, men and women that have passed upon me what they learned. And what you want to do is you want to try and help. At the same time, it took me all these years to learn that, and I have to have an understanding that it's going to take time for them. But if you can help accelerate that, it'll help us get to the promised land sooner.
Now, the game has changed a lot. So what do you look for in a modern player, and how is it different from the days you played?
I'm more of a character guy. I'm looking at who's going to help us win the tie break. When you see a guy, he runs around and he slides into a base and he's just out or he's just safe, why? And those are the things that I've always focused on as a competitor. How do you beat somebody that's better than you? It happens all the time. So that's my niche. That's my angle. I always saw myself as performing better in those situations and at my best. And I try and pass that on. The game is, they say it's changed, but in reality, it hasn't. There's rules. The thing that's unique about baseball, if you look at every other sport, everything's defined. The rinks are all pretty much the same. The basketball courts are always the same. It's 10-foot. Baseball, it's not that way. There's the dimensions change. Everything changes the way the ball comes in, the angles. And it's a unique ball game, and some people say it's boring, but is chess boring? I mean, I call it challenging. You want to play cards? You want to play fish, or you want to play bridge? I mean, it's just how engaging you want to be. It's very challenging, and it's a checker game that's amazing and fun to play.
You know, you bring up a great point. You know, you got your football fields, the exact same size everywhere. You've got different ballparks, and it's, you know, you got to hit it a lot farther at Comerica Park than you have to at another park to hit a home run.
Yeah, but it allows you other benefits. The doubles and the triples are going to be more there. You can base hits are going to be more, so contact is more important. And then outfield defense is going to be important. So you always look at the rules of the game. You look at your opponent. You look at the task. You know, do you feel 100%? Do you feel 80%? You know, somehow you got to find a way to put the barrel on the ball, put backspin on the ball. If you're at the plate, you have to find a way to catch the ball. You have to pick it up. You have to make a good throw to Trammell or Whitaker so they can, you know, they're best athletes. And, you know, most of all, you have to stay motivated and you have to be committed and you have to have perseverance. And, you know, you can say that you do, but you will be tested over time to find out if you can do it.
Now, this brings us into the subject that we're here to talk about. You talk about being motivated. You've got to persevere. You've got to beat an opponent that may be stronger than you are. So here we are, Parkinson's. Talk about how you found out you had Parkinson's and what you've done with that opponent since then.
First of all, I want to just say, and there's maybe many people or a few people that are going to, this statement's going to make sense to. I tried to deny it for many years. Mm. I was diagnosed in 2015, but I can think back to 2007 when I was shaving with my right hand and my left hand started to clutch. And I thought, that makes no sense at all. And this little signs came on and I kind of tried to write him off as athletic injuries. I didn't want to admit it, and then it all culminated on opening day of 2015 when I was on live TV, and I virtually was locked up with anxiety, something that I'd never really experienced before. And when I felt the anxiety, my tremor would start, my hand would start clutching up. And at that day, I decided that I was going to go over and call a friend of mine, Peter Secchia, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and he got me in, and I was diagnosed really in 2 days that I had Parkinson's disease. And then what? You know, your first thoughts are, you think you're going to die. You don't really, I wasn't very aware of what the disease was, so that's certainly something that we want to promote, that we want people to understand and be aware of signs, not only that they may have, but others may have. You know, then where do you go from there? You see a doctor, there are medicines that you can take, there are therapies that you can take. And, you know, you have to decide, just like any other foe, that you're going to stand up to him or not. You're going to get socked. You got to get up. It's a mental disease as well. I'm just saying that as a figure of speech. It's a neurological disease that affects your movements and your coordination. And, you know, mentally it's tough because, you know, I just see myself as an elite athlete and all of a sudden, you know, you find yourself, you think you're invincible, but you're not. And, you know, you got to decide whether you're going to get up and try and kick back or whether you're going to succumb to it. And then the other part of the disease is the caregivers. Who's going to take care of you and you feel like you're burdening them? And it's very, very tough mentally. You feel guilty about it. And there are ways to deal with that as well. So I started my foundation, the Kirk Gibson Foundation, in 1996. I awarded partial scholarships to four men and women at Clarkson High School and Waterford Kettering High School. I've been doing that, but I redirected it at that time. And we've raised about $3 million. And we've got a lot of money at work to help people deal with the news they may get and research as well.
That's fantastic. How are you doing today? It's been 4 years since you were diagnosed.
I'm fine. I know what I'm up against. I get frustrated at times. I try and stay and move. I try and stay moving. First of all, when you're diagnosed, most people are going to try and hide it. I came right out because I knew that was a burden on my mind because people are going to look at it and they're going to say, oh, what's wrong with Gibby? You know, he's, right. Because my speech is, it's tough. Like I have to do speech therapies and, you know, so before I go on the air sometimes. I go do the ahs and the all that stuff. And Matt Shepard's looking at me like, "What's wrong with this guy?" Or I may have to do it in the middle. I may have to do it in the middle of the game. But in that, and you have to work on your posture. So I'm doing good. It's a challenge. I've taken it on, but more so what I've taken on in conjunction with Michigan Parkinson's Foundation and Jeff Latham right here, we've joined together. I've always believed in teamwork. I've always believed if you're doing a puzzle, we've all done them and we've all gotten stuck. And Jeff walks by and puts one piece in, and the next thing I put the next 10 in. I just think together we can achieve more, and that's why we've formed this collaboration. And we're going to have this gala on October 19th. And you can go to evsp.org. It stands for Everybody Versus Parkinson's. And, you know, we'll get together and we will help people, make people aware what Parkinson's disease is, and we'll be there to help them if they are diagnosed.
We'll talk more about that gala in just a second, but since you've introduced Jeff Latham, the chairman of Michigan Parkinson's Foundation, we'll bring him on in here. Jeff, what does it mean to have a guy like Gibby on board with your mission? Because I know with a foundation, raising money is a tough thing to do. You got to convince people, first of all, to care. And now you got one of the most beloved athletes in Detroit history right there beside you, helping you make that pitch.
Having a champion for not only the baseball but the fundraising is incredible. It brings such an energy to the fundraising efforts, and it's a lot easier to get into the door of some place when you say, "Kirk and I would like to meet with you today." So that's been amazing. And the other piece of it for me is my father was diagnosed with Parkinson's in his mid 40s and passed away at 61. And I represent the other side, the patient advocate, taking care of my father through that time. So talking about that puzzle fitting together, I see the other side of how it affects families, and it's just a great collaboration to see both sides of it, because it is quite a connection between the two of them.
It's a journey. And for caregivers, it is so difficult. Are there resources out there? Are there enough of them for caregivers, Jeff?
We could always use more. There's over 30,000 people with Parkinson's in Michigan. It's been our mission, and what Kirk's mission as well, on top of research, is support groups across the state of Michigan. Even things that you don't think of. Nursing homes don't know how to take care of Parkinson patients properly, because there's so many different different things that happen within the disease. So education programs, respite care, in-home respite care, again, the support groups, there's just so much that can be done. When you think about it, north of Flint, there isn't a single movement specialist north of Flint in the entire state of Michigan. So there's people that need to have communication and understand when you're outside of the big city areas of the Lower Peninsula. So a lot is needed.
And that need requires money to fill. And I'm going to assume that's what the Everybody Versus Parkinson's Gala is all about, is trying to get some of that money to help out and get these services. So, Kirk, if you can give us a little preview of that party. I say party because it's a celebration of people coming together to fight something.
Yeah, well, it's a gala. It's going to be at Motor City Casino on October 19th. And we're working to make it unique and special for people that come. We obviously want it to be upbeat. But at the same time, we want to make people aware of what Parkinson's disease is about and what do you do when you are diagnosed, or you think somebody may be diagnosed, where they can go, and then their options. You have you can take different medicine, you can do therapy. My foundation is supported and is supporting a nurse navigator program where people that don't have somebody to help them, it's a nurse navigator program which takes them through the whole process. And then they are there for them. And then I also, when I went to a movement specialist and got into a therapy session, it's called Big and Loud. You learned how to do movements and to correct your posture, and you learned how to correct your voice and utilize that properly. But the way insurance is, these programs that I'm mentioning, it's just not as easy as everybody's insurance is going to cover that, because it doesn't. That's another one of the problems. And we created what's called the EVSP program, which is the post Big and Loud program, where insurance does not cover it, where it's paid for. And I've started that pilot program. It's been going for 2.5 years now. It's been highly successful. And a lot of my work started in West Michigan because I raised my first thing was a Gibby and Sparty versus Parkey function mm-hmm. at the Michigan State Notre Dame game 2.5 years ago. And we raised $1.3 million and we put that to work over in Grand Rapids. But many of these pilots that we start now with the collaboration with Jeff and his organization, the Michigan Parkinson's Foundation, now we're coming together and we're going to get those programs over here in the Detroit side as well. So, you know, it's important. It's confusing to many. And the gala will be a good time. We'll come in. We'll have a VIP reception, obviously. You always have those. And we'll have a strolling dinner with some educational things that go on. And we'll move over into the soundboard and we'll have some entertainment. And we'll get to see Kirk Gibson dance with Parkinson's, too. That's not an ugly sight. But Jeff will teach me how I get.
We both decided that we like to have a good time and listen to great music. So we really think it's going to be an exciting event.
Yes. Yeah, so.
Oh, it's going to be great.
It'll be special.
Yeah. God bless you for what you do. You know, you've taken what you've been given here and really made a difference in a lot of people's lives.
So. Well, my late mentor, Sparky Anderson, the one thing he beat into all of us was make sure that you don't forget how you got to where you are and you make sure that you give back. And I can still see him pointing that finger at me. And if you're thinking about not doing that, he'd shake it. No, no, that's not going to work here. So he taught us how to be professional and I needed it. And he taught me how to give back. And it feels good to be that way.
Well, back in 84, we saw you beat Goose. So we know you can do it.
Well, I don't know if I can beat him, but I'm going to fight him good. And, you know, I had a thing happen to me when I was with the Dodgers. Jesse Orosco put eye black in my hat, and I was so mad because they were screwing around, and Sparky always had us so serious. So I stood in front of them the next day and articulated why it bothered me. You know, it was our first spring training game. I thought it was like the seventh game of the World Series. So he put that in my hat, and I told those guys, I said, "Yeah, I'm here to win ball games. That's winning is fun to me. You'll see in the end that I'm going to be the best teammate ever." And I said, "I'll sacrifice and do whatever I have to do," and basically challenged them all to come at me. And I said, "No, you go ahead and beat me up. I don't care. I'll sacrifice to show you. But by the way, I will get 4 or 5 of you guys. So, if you got anything, so that's kind of the way we take it. I'm going to lead the charge the best I can, and we'll take as much of Parkey that we can. We're committed to trying to find a cure. But in the meantime, how do you care for yourself and for your loved ones that do have it?
Wow. Kirk Gibson, Jeff Latham, thank you both for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, evsp.org for ticket information and all the details about the great gala coming up.
That was a good rehearsal, guys.
Go ahead and